Welcome to the Real Estate Mindset Podcast, hosted by Eric Nelson and brought to you by Wild Oak Capital. Eric is a real estate investor, business owner, and performance coach. Throughout this series, Eric explores the mindset behind why certain investors are so successful and how we can learn from their achievements and failures. Eric asks the tough questions around the habits, discipline, mindset, and more required to achieve the most ambitious goals. Thank you for being here and enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, welcome to Real Estate Mindset. This is your host, Eric Nelson, and today's guest, Dasha Beardsley, is, their company is amazing. I've sort of been following Rob and Lone Star for quite some time. I just really love his underwriting. I love his book. And, you know, Dasha has a unique perspective. Like, she comes from sort of a little bit other side of investor relations. And I really like this conversation as well, because she has so many cool ideas around that. And then some tips in the book question was really cool. So just a really, really cool interview. So without further ado, I'll bring in Dasha. Okay, Dasha Beardsley, thanks for coming on. This is my pleasure to have you here today.
Thank you. I'm excited to be on.
Well, cool. So Dasha, let's kind of hear your story. So maybe give us your background. Tell us about what you guys are up to. I mean, I think probably some listeners will know what you're up to. And of course, we can get into all kinds of detail, but I'd love to hear your story. Where'd you start, you know, and then where are you from and all that stuff? And where'd you end up where you are?
Yeah. So I'm from the San Francisco Bay Area. I went to USC, the University of Southern California, and I got a degree in real estate development. And about halfway through my college experience and undergrad, I started working with my brother, who is the founder and one of the principals of Lone Star Capital. So it was never really my plan to go down this path. I was always pretty interested in real estate in general, and specifically development, which is why I got my degree in real estate development. But my brother's company was just kind of starting out, and we kind of slowly started working together. It wasn't necessarily my long-term plan, but it's definitely how it worked out. And yeah, so basically I started working in college for Lone Star. And then I would say by the time that I was in my senior year, I was pretty much full-time. I only had a couple of night classes, so I was really dedicating a lot of my time to the firm, but it was mostly on the marketing side. And then some investor services. I wasn't doing too much actually talking to investors. But yeah, more kind of projects and marketing, social media management, things like that. And since graduating, I have been full-time with the firm ever since. And I am now the director of investor relations, and I still oversee marketing, but I have some help on that end.
They still have help, right? Especially when it comes to social media, it's like, it can become quite a bit. So
yes.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I've sort of, I've mentioned that I've met Rob before and seen, you know, some of the content, it's really, really good. I mean, I think his underwriting is impeccable, and I've read his book. So I'm like kind of a fan of the firm in general. So what a cool place to work, right? And you guys just do such a cool job, like just kind of setting the bar for underwriting. And then two, just it seems like you guys really understand the market trends very well, which is something like I think people forget, right? Like we have to come back to the fundamentals, especially in a time right now, it's harder to find deals. It's like, what are the fundamentals of the market and where are we going? We'll get into that a little bit, but super, super cool. I mean, so you enjoy it now. And then just for listeners, maybe describe what that means to be head of investor relationships. That work itself is also, I think, a little unknown. So maybe describe a little bit about what you do.
So I think it can vary from company to company as far as what exactly the investor relations roles entail. But the way that I see it, there's kind of three ways to break up the role. So one would be investor services. So that's more kind of admin type, signing documents, sending side letters, helping with the portal, things like that. There's more answering questions and really walking through deals with investors and answering their more kind of difficult questions and ongoing investors, things like that. And then the third would be, which I'm very much fond of, is working on new initiatives to grow our investor base. So for example, we've been really working a lot on meeting more of our investors in person, getting them to bring, you know, people within their network that might be a good fit for us. So like referral type of business. So anyways, just things like that, starting new initiatives to bring in more investors is also part of my role. And I think is pretty common with investor relations roles.
Yeah, I love it. So a couple of things I'll add on to that, at least the way I envision it. So we send out a monthly update for every property, which is a lot of work. And that I think would roll into your role, I'd imagine, is just like making sure those updates look nice, making sure they're accurate, and then getting out to all the correct investors, that kind of thing. And then one other thing we do is we send a gift for people who invest with us. And I, like, that has fallen under that umbrella, at least the way I view it, of investor relationship as well. And you're right, it's interesting. I mean, every investor has different questions and different needs. And so this is like, what I'll say is you wear a lot of hats when you're in your seat. So do you feel that way? Do you feel a little like you're doing a little bit of all of the stuff sometimes?
For sure. And yeah, that's definitely a good point that I didn't really mention within that role. So it's not just answering investors' questions, but also giving them service. So there's levels to the service that you can give investors. And so we really want to try to work up and give even better service to our investors. So that includes, you know, sending gifts, sending books to people who we think might like them, referral gifts, things like that. And also just kind of more sentimental things that take more time to, you know, you can't just be spending all your time doing gifts. So having more help in that regard is really can increase the service that we give to our investors. But yeah, I definitely have a lot of my hands in a lot of different roles. However, we also now have Craig on the team, which is the director of business development. So he does more, like there's a lot of overlap between our roles, but he does more of the sales side. And I'm more of the ongoing relationship. And then now we also have an amazing executive assistant, which will handle actually sending out the gifts. So luckily, I won't be doing that.
Again, it's nice to have help, right, with those things. It's funny, I have an assistant as well. And she does a lot of things. But some things she really enjoys. And one is like packaging and like sending these gifts. That's really funny to me because like that's something I would really struggle with. Like it would take me forever. And so it's nice to like find those people who are good at that. But that's sort of a sidebar. So let's kind of dive in, Dasha. I mean, what are you seeing in the market now? Where are you guys headed? What are you investing in lately? You know, let's kind of dive into the market trends a little bit.
Yeah. So as many of the listeners may know, the market's been a bit crazy lately with how volatile interest rates are. And there has been a drastic decrease in transaction volume in 2023, and we're still seeing that in 2024. The thing that we're seeing, though, is most of the sellers that are selling in this time, the market's down, so it's not a good time to be selling. Just in general, I can't speak to as much the single family space, but as far as multifamily assets, which is what we're in, it's not a good time to be selling. The market is definitely down, so these are forced sellers. So that obviously creates a little bit of a different dynamic. And also, not only are they forced sellers, but they're also kind of the first-ish of the bunch to actually have to sell. So, of course, there's great range with the types of properties that you can see that are selling right now, but we're seeing some, like, financial distress can also lead to physical distress. So definitely not all the properties that we're looking at are super run down, but that also is a theme that I think we're going to be seeing more and more of, because as these owners who aren't able to make their mortgage payments, they're not going to be putting more money into the property. And it also decreases morale at the property level. So it hasn't gotten too scary at this point. But I think that we're just going to see more and more of that as we head deeper into 2024.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've talked about this a lot on this show too. And I don't want to go too far in the weeds here, but there was a lot of bridge debt being taken out in 2020 and 21. Which was short-term debt. So like 18-month, two-year, or sometimes three-year debt. And a lot of times interest only. And we're seeing a lot of that come due. And what's interesting is a lot of those notes were 3.25 to 3.75 maybe interest rate. And now they're probably in the sevens, right, to refinance. And so it's pushed people in this position, like you're describing, to have to sell or refinance in a position where they likely can't afford debt service. And so we're seeing this trend coming into place. And I think that's really interesting for the market. Now, you know, if you're an owner, I mean, that's a scary situation to be in, right? Like, I will say some of our properties are far outperforming what we thought and some are underperforming. That's just a reality, I think, of the business. But you're seeing now that, okay, for the last 10 plus years, well, more than that, let's say 20 years for that matter, things were cruising along pretty good. And now all of a sudden, we're seeing a little bit more of a struggle, really in acquisitions, like you said. I mean, trend is way down on purchases, like you said, but it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next year. So like, aside from perhaps more distressed sellers, what do you think, I mean, it's hard to predict, right? But what are you guys seeing in the market? And are you only investing in Texas or are you outside of Texas as well? But then to finish my question, what are you seeing for 2024 and beyond?
So yes, we only invest in Texas, and specifically we're only in Houston, Dallas, and San Antonio. So we don't look outside of those markets. That's part of our strategy is to be very focused geographically. But as far as what we're seeing, so I mean, right now we've already started to see deals that are making more sense for, especially in 2023, it was really hard to find any deals where the pricing was, you know, remotely close to what we were seeing to make sense for us. So we're seeing more of that. It's just where the market has gone down significantly, and obviously sellers are still holding on to yesterday's price. So we're seeing kind of more of an acceptance that the property value has gone down on the seller's end. But I think we're just going to see more and more of that going into 2024 and 2025. I think, though, maybe this time last year, we were going to be expecting a little bit more of that by this time. So I think the runway is going to be a little bit longer. But that's just my personal prediction. I think, you know, some people think it's maybe just 2024 is going to be the time where prices are going to be lower, but I think it's going to still be happening in 2024. I don't think that we're going to be just coming out of this in 2024. I think still going to be maybe hitting the bottom, maybe even to 2025.
Yeah, it's really hard to know. And like you said, I mean, interest rates, they're all over the place. So it's really, really hard to predict. And I try not to, but it's very interesting conversation, right? Like, I mean, that's really what we're in this business for, is to say, what do we think is going to happen over the next 5 years? It's our job to at least have some idea, but I just think the reality is none of us really know. We can probably predict the amount of tougher loans coming due. I mean, in Texas, it's different, but in some states, we can see the debt. It's clear as day, right? But that's a very hard thing even to have a ton of data on that's really specific. Because the other thing is some people could refinance and still be able to cover debt and hang on for a couple more years, that kind of thing. So it's just a really challenging thing to understand. So basically what I'll say is, did you guys have some acquisitions in 23? I assume you're not selling a whole lot right now, but what does your 23 into 24 look like? And are you guys looking constantly?
Yeah, we're definitely looking constantly. We're not necessarily acquiring constantly, but we're definitely always looking. In 2023, we acquired 5 properties. We bundled into a portfolio. We definitely did a lot less than we expected, but transaction volume was, you know, down. I think it was about 80%. So there really wasn't many opportunities for us in 2023. And yeah, we didn't sell any properties in 2023. And, you know, there might be some opportunistic exits that we have in 2024, but likely just one where it's, you know, a special tax sort of situation. But yeah, it's not a good time to sell. And luckily, we're not in a position where we have to for any of the properties in our portfolio. So I don't expect we're going to be having many, if any, exits soon.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Sounds good. Well, I have a couple of questions for you, Dasha, and that might lead into some more questions beyond that, because I really like the framework of these because it sort of leads into more. So what books are you reading, or what books can you recommend for listeners?
So I recently just started reading again. I think the title is 1 Minute Manager. It's a very short book, which I think is nice. I think in general, a lot of the books, even amazing popular ones, they reiterate the same idea over and over again. So a lot of the times I'll just listen to audiobooks, but I think that one is really great. As I'm growing in my role, I have a few direct reports. And so I think it's super important to be a good manager, not only obviously take care of my work in an effective manner, but being an effective manager. So that's what that book is about. And then also, which is more relevant to the investor relations side, is I forget what the book is called. Oh, it's Giftology. That was really interesting. So like one nugget from that book that is really interesting is any gift that has your company's logo on it is not a gift. It's marketing. So like if you want to give someone, for example, someone invests with you, you really want to give them a nice gift. Like it shouldn't have your logo on it. It should be something of theirs. So for example, sometimes we'll give out like a charcuterie board and we'll put their family's last name, not a big Lone Star Capital logo.
Wow, that's really cool. You know, what's interesting is I had a guest on the show, and I'll show up for those watching right here. He sent me some coasters with my logo on it. And And that's the first time I'd seen that. In fact, there's two of them, so I'll show the other one. Like, that was, like, when I got that, I was like, wow, that's extremely thoughtful. Because to your point, it actually makes me remember it more than anything. It's more like they're thinking of me rather than thinking of them for the gift. That's a great nugget. Mm-hmm. So I love that. I love that tip. What a cool one. So I've actually never heard of either of those books. That's why I like that question, is like, now I have more to go to. It's called Giftology, you said?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Okay. So Dasha, I mean, I know that like you had started in college, but have you ever had a direct mentor or coach help you through some of this stuff?
No, not in a traditional way. I had a job previous to Lone Star in college. It was about a year and a half. So the kind of first part of my time in college, and it was an affordable housing consulting firm. So I would say that I learned a lot of good skills that I've brought into this role from that job, as far as organization, but I haven't really had any mentorships. I think the closest thing that I could have to that is my brother, because although we do maintain a pretty, I guess, conventional boss to employee relationship, like it's not like he's teaching me stuff all the time, but, you know, just always hearing him talking on the phone. And of course, I get to ask questions whenever I want. I think that I've learned the most specifically about career and this industry from him, even though he's not technically my mentor.
So let's back up a little bit. How did Lone Star get started? And how old is the company? Let's kind of hear the company story, if you don't mind.
Yeah. So the company started in 2018 when Rob and Kent, which Kent is Rob's business partners, and they purchased their first property in 2018. And they brought property management in-house in 2021. So the first couple of years were a little slow, but we've been really ramping up and being able to grow as our capital has access to capital has grown, and also our infrastructure as a firm. But yeah, basically the way that it started is Rob and Kent separately wanted to start buying deals in Texas. They met at a conference, Best Ever. I think it was the one in 2018. And they just started talking back and forth, and they realized that there was a lot of similarities in what they wanted to do and their approach. Yet they also had very complementary skills. So you know, they kind of are opposites in that regard of what they do for the firm. So our firm is kind of split in, I don't want to say because we definitely are a team, but it's kind of split in half as far as Kent is on the more operations and asset management side, and then Rob is more on the acquisitions and capital markets. So there's definitely crossover between the two, but there's a separation there as far as roles.
Love it. Yeah, that's actually a good lesson. I always tell people, like, search out a partner that's exact opposite of you. And it doesn't have to be that their personality is, but their skill sets, right? So, like, that's a really, really cool tip, as well as, like, you know what? You might be amazing at one thing. Focus on that and then find someone else who's really good at the things either you don't like doing or you're not good at. So I've said that a million times, and I think it rings true. And when you see companies that are successful, a lot of times that's the case, right? The partnerships all have differing skills. And so, yeah, really, really cool. All right, Dasha, this one's a little harder. What's something that you've done that you would not repeat? So I hesitate to use the word mistake, but something we can learn from.
I have to think about this one.
Sent a gift with your logo on it.
You know, there's a time and place for everything, but yeah, we definitely don't do that too often. I guess I would say this was when I was first starting out, and we actually talked about this on our own podcast, the Capital Spotlight, I was the guest on. I would say kind of treating it, it's obviously very interesting working with family, and there isn't too much of an age gap with my brother and I. And so I guess in the beginning, I didn't really recognize the seriousness. I was maybe 20 or 21. And so I was kind of making a joke, and I tickled my brother in front of the team. And that was something that, you know, he wasn't super upset about, but he was like, that's super not appropriate to do. Like, there needs to be a separation. If you're going to work with family or, you know, a close friend, whatever it may be, or spouse, there needs to be a separation, not only in front of the others in the team. I think when you're talking about business, there needs to be that separation. And then also when you are in that personal side, when it's not in a business setting, it's important, I think, to also have those boundaries where, you know, I'm not like hounding him about how to do something for work in their personal setting.
Yeah, I love that. I really, really love that lesson. It's so hard to like I work with my wife as well. So, and my brother. So like this hits home for me. Like we have to have the separation, clear separation, especially with my brother. It's like, hey, look, when business happens, it happens. And there's some hard conversations sometimes. It's like, you know, either he'll tell me something that he feels like I could do better or vice versa. Right. And that's a hard conversation to have with your brother, but it just has to be like, it's not that I don't love you and care about you very strongly as a brother, but this needs to change. Right. Or, you know, just an example, like when I get home with my wife, she tends to want to talk about work because either I haven't been super available or like, she's like, okay, I got you. Like, let's talk.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, okay, we got 30 minutes and then it's like, turn it off. Right. Like there has to be some boundaries there. So it's a challenge. Sure. I think a lot of people, you know, say don't work with family, don't work with spouses, don't work with friends, things like that. I'm not sure I subscribe to that whatsoever. I mean, I think you can definitely make those things work. In fact, those relationships might build even deeper, but I really love your thoughts there. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, Dasha, last question is, what's your definition of success?
I would say like there's some sort of freedom aspect to it, but I would say just being knowledgeable, and I keep wanting to use the word successful, but knowledgeable, and I guess maybe this is just a synonym, but accomplished in whatever you want to do. So if like there isn't really any ranking or hierarchy for art, like just being dedicated to your work and being knowledgeable about it, like whatever your passion may be or your work may be, just being good at it and working towards it consistently.
This is like, I don't know why this came to my mind, but this feels like a very Japanese culture thing, right? Like they, I mean, from what I understand, Japanese culture is they sort of dedicate themselves to their craft. Mm-hmm. And that's such a cool concept. And they find honor in doing that, right? Like that sort of hit home in my mind as you were talking, like, yeah, like find the thing that you love and then sort of give it all, your all, like go for it, right? That's such a cool definition. I have not heard anything quite like that, Dasha. So thank you for presenting it that way. That's so cool. Because what you also said was it's not about an amount of money. It's not necessarily about an amount of time or any of that stuff. It's you're dedicating yourself and being knowledgeable and like kind of going for it. So I really, really love that. What a cool answer.
I think also it has to do a bit with flow. I didn't actually read this book, but there was a concept from a book that Rob read where basically people who are in flow, the longer, the better. Basically, people who are in flow longer are happier. And flow is more, it's like a focus, but it's not so focused to the point where it's like something is very difficult. Like you know how to do it, but it's taking your focus and you're really truly living in the present. And so that, what you said about dedicating yourself to your craft, I feel like emulates that, like seeing your work as your craft and being really present with it, I think, you know, makes you happier, more present, and, you know, more successful, ultimately, likely financially as well.
Yeah, that's an awesome point. And I don't know what book you were speaking about, but Tony Robbins talks about this. Like he describes his flow. Sometimes he uses the word state. He actually uses that word a lot. Like, he talks about being in that state. And so that's really cool. So again, the challenge I think is to find the thing that can give you that flow and then tend to focus on those things. And again, I think in this world that we're in, it's like, it's so distracting, right? Lots of distractions. I mean, email alone, that's a major distraction. But if you can find the thing that you're like, okay, this is what I want to dedicate my time to and effort to, and you can get in this flow, that's super powerful. What's interesting is like, you know, there's some research around what Tony Robbins is talking about. They're saying like time tends to feel different as well. So like if you're in a flow state, time can go very quickly just because it's like, it feels good and it fulfills you. So this is a really cool conversation. I wish I was more knowledgeable about it. Like I wish I could describe when and where we're talking, but I mean, I think we can understand the concept, right? And that's really cool. So I appreciate your thoughts here.
Thank you.
Well, Dasha, this has been an amazing show. I mean, again, I've sort of been a fan of you guys' company for quite some time, and I just think that you guys have a level of professionalism and, you know, lead the charge on a lot of things, inclusive of, in my opinion, underwriting. And again, knowing a lot about market space, and now it's really good to know you as well on the kind of investor side, because I've always sort of followed your company on like a more mathematical way, but it's cool to hear you guys have the, what I'll call like softer side, you know, like investor relations is something I take very seriously. And so it's kind of cool to have this conversation. So the final question I'll ask is, where can people find you?
Yeah. So the books that you mentioned that you read of ours, the underwriting model, and, you know, any other sort of information can be found on our website, which is lscre.com. And anyone can reach out to me as well at Dasha, D-A-S-H-A, at lscre.com.
Awesome. Well, again, thanks, Dasha. Thanks for your time. Appreciate you being on.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
What a great show. Dasha had a lot to say. Specific to those kind of those softer things like you mentioned, I really enjoy hearing another perspective, especially for a company so dialed as theirs. You know, it's interesting. I mean, acquisitions were down across the country. And so to hear that truth sort of continue to ring true, and it's like, it sort of makes me feel like, okay, at least I'm not crazy, right? Like, we're not the only ones struggling to find deals, but really, really enjoy the conversation. I hope you did too. Thank you for spending your time here, and we'll see you in the next one.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Real Estate Mindset Podcast. If you've enjoyed the content today, please follow this show wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to head over to wildoakcapital.com for more information or to connect with Eric directly. Please take a moment to leave a review or tell a friend about what you've listened to today. We hope you'll tune in again soon.